Hello, and welcome to the first episode of the new year for The Prestige, a podcast about films, filmmaking, and film theory.
Each programme will focus on a particular movie. We're going to review it, talk about it, talk about some of the ideas and the themes it throws up.
And as always, we'll end with our recommendations for films to watch following this week's film. The links can be close or as tenuous as we want, basically.
But before all that, who are we and why should you care? As we're in the mid-30s of our podcast now, I won't go into too much information here, but my name is Rob Maythorn. I am a film maker, now turned film critic. Sam, my colleague, Dr. Sam, is a lecturer and teacher and writer on culture and literature and books and movies and all that kind of thing.
And we are starting this year even, with a film that made Rob's top five of 2015, which I have now seen, albeit several weeks behind the rest of the movie watching world. So spoiler avoidance was hard on that one.
I can imagine.
So I think, Rob, you should introduce it.
Yeah, I think that this is probably not the best film of the year, probably the biggest film event of the year. This was the seventh installment of the Star Wars franchise, The Force Awakens.
I was raised to do one thing, but I've got nothing to fight for.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
Before we get too far into this, this is going to be a blanket warning for spoilers. There are a couple of twists, shall we say, in the film, and it's hard to discuss this film without discussing this twist. So from this point onwards, you are in spoiler territory. I can't imagine you listening to a podcast about the film and you haven't seen it yet, but just in case you haven't, this is now a spoiler zone.
Right.
The film picks up 30 years after the last Star Wars film, Episode 6, telling, in many ways, some new stories and some old stories. So we see some old characters come back. We see Princess Leia come back. We see Han Solo come back. We see Chewbacca come back. We have new characters. We have Rey, who is a orphan on a desert planet as a scavenger trying to make her way. We see Finn, who is a ex-stormtrooper now on the run. And Poe Dameron, who is the best pilot in the Resistance. And those are our three main good guys. On the bad guy sides, we've got Kylo Ren, who is the one with the mask and the lightsaber. And I genuinely don't know the guy's name, but his compatriot on the bad guy, who is sort of the leader of the armies, played by one of the guys from Harry Potter.
Angry shouting guy. Yeah.
I can't remember his name. I should know it, but I must say I can't. Essentially, the story follows normal beat. You've got the rise of the evil First Order, you've got our plucky heroes coming together, discovering new talents, discovering new friends, coming up to overcome the bad guys and eventually destroy their super weapon. It is lovely looking, but that's just a quick overview of the plot. Anyone who's listened to our last podcast knows my feelings on the film, but Sam, a quick review from you.
Right. Some definitely good things about the film first. Daisy Ridley was brilliant. Ray. And John Boyega as Finn was also very good. Actually, that sounds like I'm doing him down compared to Daisy Ridley. I really like those two. I like the way they interacted, particularly. There were some nice nods to past films I liked, particularly the sequence with their visit to, was it Mars Bar?
Yep,
it sort of echoed the cantina scene, and I liked that. I thought the action sequences were very good, and I do like action films, but there comes a point in an action film where I can say, right, I'm getting a bit bored of all this now. It's something that happens if maybe the characters haven't been developed in a certain way. It certainly happened with Spectre, as an example, from last year. There were points in the action sequences and that where I thought, well, yeah, it looks great, but I'm a bit bored now. That didn't happen in this film. I love the way it was edited, and the music, as ever, John Williams is always brilliant. A couple of cons. I'm not sure the plot was great. I know this is based on a George Lucas story written in the mid 70s. Anyway, this is not really a criticism of the way that the screenwriters were working now. The Harrison Ford Carrie Fisher interactions, although I love those two characters, those two actors, I didn't particularly like it when they came together. And Poe Dameron, I was not convinced by. But in general, I thought it was a brilliant film. It was really good.
Fair enough. Well, I covered it a little bit briefly in the last week's episode, but I really, excuse me, I really enjoyed the film. I think Sam's right. I think that the new guys are strong. I like Poe Dameron. I think he didn't do a lot in the film. I think he's underused. But I think that his opening scene, his interaction with Kylo Ren, had me laughing in the first 5 minutes. And I think that's a strong... I do agree he was massively underused, and he just kind of pops up at the beginning and the end. I like Rey. I like Finn. The old guard coming back... I think there's only really two characters to speak of, which is Leia and Han. The Chewbacca and the droids are what they are, really. I thought they were handled well. I agree with my wife on this one, that I think Han Solo phoned in a little bit. I don't think he quite was digging to the role as we'd want. But I thought that the scenes between him and Leia were moving, and I think that the emotion of a parent who's lost a son, who's lost a child, was very raw then. It felt kind of natural. They've aged, they've been through a lot. It had that kind of old relationship awkwardness that I liked. I would agree with you on the plot. I think the plot, the original Star Wars, The New Hope, is often used as the archetype for Joseph Campbell's A Hero's Journey. It is, by beat, the hero awakes, the refusal of it, the death of a mentor, all that kind of thing. And I think you probably take this plot of that and the plot of Force Awakens and line them up almost to the second. We have all the same beats. We have the death of the mentor and the death of Han Solo. We have the destruction of the new Death Star via a trench run. I got that they were trying to sort of reinvoke some of the elements of the original trilogy rather than the prequels. But for me, it felt a little bit like, I've seen this world before, I've seen this story before. There's interesting characters and it's fun characters, but it didn't do anything interesting with the world or with the plot. Mm. You know, like from the start of this film, everything that happens, you always see where it's going to go. There wasn't anything interesting with the plot or development of it. No. And even the two big twists, which I say in inverted commas, the revelation of Kylo Ren as Han Solo and Leia's son, and the death of Han Solo, both of those were quite well signposted. When they happened, it wasn't a shock to anyone in the audience. You knew for a good 5-10 minutes prior to it happening that was what was going on.
Yeah, I thought the scene between Han and Kylo Ren on the bridge was just possibly the most predictable, supposedly unpredictable twist I've ever seen.
Yes.
I just knew that was coming.
And I think that was the same for me through almost the entire film, that we always, like, every scene I knew where it was going. Mm. I enjoyed where it went. I enjoyed the, like, it was a good, fun film to watch. I enjoy watching it. I've seen it twice now, and do it both times. But it isn't a surprising film. It isn't a film that takes me down places I didn't think I was going to go.
Mm.
And yes, the argument made around me being a blockbuster, and all that kind of comes up. But I think that, on the whole, I enjoyed it. I don't think it's as good as some of Star Wars films. I think it's a lot better than some of the Star Wars films. Mm.
Yes.
I think it's unusual to have a trilogy with 7 films that is still this good.
Yeah.
But I think Star Wars is alone in its nature of being a set of trilogies rather than a franchise of seven films.
Mm. I wonder... There's something about the first film, and I know what you're saying about the rise of the hero, and when the film, talking about A New Hope now, just for a minute, when the film gets to Mark Hamill's arc, I agree with what you're saying that it sort of is one that you can map onto later films, but the first part of that film, George Lucas is not afraid to be a bit baggy.
Yes.
There are bits of that film where you think, this is just C-3PO and R2-D2 just hanging out. And you think, where is this going? And it's kind of... I suppose how I like to think of... There's something comparable in TV is Blackadder, where they've talked about how, with the first series, they can afford to just go for a wander. And everyone involved admits they got it wrong, but the BBC said, there's something good there. You can tighten it up and bring it back for a second series.
Yes.
And it turns into one of the greatest TV programmes ever made. And there's something like that with Star Wars. I think the first Star Wars is much better than the first Blackadder, if that is the comparison. But there's still a sense in which George Lucas is sort of finding his feet in that first film that you don't get in a film like this, which is very slick and very tight. And I'm sorry, I'm a bit sad about that.
I can see what you're saying. I think I did watch the three originals prior to seeing The Force Awakens the first time, and they are slower than you think, especially the first film. Baggy is the right word for it. It just kind of wanders at times, and you have these long chats where nothing really happens, and people wander around, and it is a very different film than somehow society remembers it to being. I think that if there is a big criticism to let the film, I would lay it at the door of the director, which is J.J. Abrams. And that's mainly because I don't really like him as a director.
Okay.
Which seems to be a strange thing to say after liking this film. And I've liked other ones of his films, but I always feel like he's just making visual fan fiction.
Hmm.
Now, lovely. I mean, I will very quickly pull up his IMDb while we're chatting, but like, obviously his other big success recently was Star Trek, the new Star Trek film. Hmm. And anyone who's seen the Star Trek film, it's kind of, once again, Star Trek fan fiction. You know, it's kind of in the same world, kind of the same characters, but it's a little bit different, but it doesn't do anything interesting. You know, prior to that, he did Super 8, which basically is a Spielberg fan fiction film, did Mission Impossible 3, a great Mission Impossible film, but he's still playing in someone else's fan box. And I think that he's a very commercial director, and I think if you want to bring someone in to make your film work and be popular and good, you hire J.J. Abrams. But I'm never expecting him to surprise me with a film. He's never going to show me something that I didn't think I was going to see.
Okay, counter-argument.
Okay.
Maybe that's what this needed. I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying about J.J. Abrams.
Okay.
But maybe, this is something I've thought about and talking about for this podcast, the idea of steampunk, which is not a term that gets used when thinking about Star Wars much. I suppose thinking about it as a sort of soap opera, or is it star opera? I can't remember. Space opera, yes, idiot. Right, cut that out, made me look good. So it's often talked about in terms of the space opera, but steampunk is not a term that's often used to talk about Star Wars, but the most famous misconception about it is that it's futuristic, whereas it's definitely not, and it tells you that in the very first line of all the films. So there's something about Star Wars that is about kind of being a bit futuristic, maybe, but also very definitely being rooted in the past. And there are nods to previous technology and sort of steam technology, and you get, I suppose, not steam powered, but things like the speeders are quote unquote old technology in this new universe. And I think there's something about that that gets to the heart of this series' appeal. The appeal of all these films is the way that Lucas and in general the films as a whole made steampunk a popular medium. And I think maybe it was Abrams' awareness of this and the fact that, I suppose, I can see what you're saying, that he's maybe a safe pair of hands, but he definitely buys into this idea of Star Wars being something nostalgic about it. There's something in the appeal that gets to something nostalgic about people, gets to this connection with steampunk, and he bought into this, and I think that was what made this film really good.
One thing that, to move on from that and build on that a little bit, I think one thing that really struck me and got made my notes here is that this film had a job to do, if you know what I mean. And I mean, both Sam and I grew up with the original Star Wars films. We both lived through the prequels, and I'm sure we'll touch later on our views of the prequels. It had a job to win back the fans, and I thought it was an incredibly interesting idea about a film. The film, aside from being a story, aside from being a cinematic piece of art and entertainment, has a cultural job to do.
Yes. Yeah.
And I thought that, I can't think of another film that I've seen that has so much of, like, a meta job, a meta work to do with the fan base as a element of fiction. I mean, Jurassic World had a little bit, because really the last two Jurassic Worlds weren't very good, and this was a desire to pull it back. But nothing has the cultural weight of this film.
No.
And having had such the high point of the trilogy and the low point of the prequels, I thought it was a really interesting idea that films now have jobs to do. And it's something that we touched on previously with Marvel films, that Marvel films do the same, where films have a job to introduce a character. The film exists as a story, as a text by itself, but it also, on top of that, has a job in the larger world to introduce this character or this bad guy. And it's something that I suppose the first time I can remember seeing this was in the original X-Men film, way, way back in the 90s, probably. And I remember watching that film, liking that film, but always thinking it was too busy trying to be a franchise to be a film.
Okay, yeah.
It was too busy trying to set up this franchise to be a film itself. And saving me the time. But I thought it was an interesting idea that films these days can be more than just a commercial property or more than just an artistic property. They have a job as well.
That brings back to something you were saying at the start about this film being a cultural event. And that speaks to this idea of a film having a job to do. And it's something we saw last year. You mentioned with Jurassic World. It was also something we saw with Spectre, this continuation of a Bond franchise where it becomes more about the film having to do a job, and the job is to not disappoint. I think, well, with Jurassic World and Spectre, the least I was expecting was that they wouldn't disappoint me, and they just about scraped that. Whereas with this new Star Wars film, the least I was expecting it wouldn't disappoint me, and then it actually did more than that. So it did more than I was expecting it to.
I think whilst we have maybe talked negatively about some of the interesting things about it, I do want to say, this is one of my favourite films of the year. This was a lot of fun. I genuinely left this movie feeling so upbeat. And it does leave me wondering why so many like blockbusters you don't feel that way. Given that, essentially, in theory, all blockbusters end in the same kind of triumph of the good guys, destruction of the bad guys, sort of moralistic ending. I don't know why this film left me so upbeat and cheering in the same way that Jurassic World didn't. And other films of the same kind of ilk, Transformers, you don't leave going, yeah, that's awesome, I want to watch it again. You're like, yeah, that's good, that's fun. Even if you enjoy it, you don't end up with that kind of euphoria in the bit.
what are your expectations for the next one in this series? I mean, you've talked about this as being, I suppose, three trilogies rather than one whole group of films. And I suppose we looked through the connections between this and the second trilogy. We're not going to talk about the first trilogy. But how do you think this is going to work in its own self-contained way as the third trilogy?
I think that whilst I have kind of said the film is negative, is its kind of slavish recreation of the first film. I very much hope that, as I said, that's their job. The job of this film was to bring everyone back on board. Everyone's pumped off this film. Now they've got a bought-in audience and they can go somewhere different.
Yes.
You've got a young Jedi who's got a Jedi Master to train them. And it isn't Yoda in the swamp. It is a different sort of Jedi Master. I'm hoping they can take... So Episode 8, Episode 9 can go somewhere new. I don't want to see another planet-sized, moon-sized super weapon. I've seen that three times now. I have no desire to... I mean, you keep the tropes. You keep the idea that the opening shot is almost always something giant going in front of a planet. You know, that's a brilliant thing. You keep the weird noises of the droids no one translates. I like that. So you keep those little things, but I hope they move away from slavishly creating the earlier films. I don't want to see Empire again with the new guys.
And that's a really interesting point that, like you said, they've got the audience on board now. People have bought into this idea, and it's something I know Quantum of Solace sometimes seen as a backward step, but it's something that I think the Daniel Craig Bond films did before Spectre, was that this new Bond with Casino Royale got a load of people on side, and then they could afford to go in different places.
Mm.
Go in different directions. You've spoken about the writer's strike and the difficulties over the script of Quantum of Solace, but I still think that film did interesting things, and I think you had the very different Bond of Skyfall. Was another direction for Bond. So I see what you're saying. I like the idea that now J.J. Abrams, if he does the next films or whoever they bring on board, is he directing the next film?
I don't believe he is. I don't know offhand if he isn't, but I believe he's handing it over to somebody else.
Right. Whoever he hands it to then has the license to take this in a different direction.
And I hope they do. I love this world. I love the Star Wars world. I love lightsabers. I love spaceships. I love X-Wings. I love all of the trappings of this world. I just don't want to see the same story again.
Mm.
And as much as I loved this film, I felt I had seen this story before. And they've got good characters. The main four new characters, five characters, if you could, Cloud, Chowty, Ginger Man, people have bought into them as characters. People love Finn and Rey and Poe, and even Kylo as a bad guy. There's some cultural love for them. I hope they can use that for something interesting and fun rather than just another, you know, B-grade popcorn movie. So, recommendations based off the biggest film event of last year.
Right. I have one sort of jokish recommendation, which I thought of when I was thinking about this. In terms of steampunk, this film, and I was thinking how badly wrong this film could have gone if it were something like Wild Wild West, and that is the very definition of how not to do a steampunk film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my non-recommendation, my don't go away and see this of the week. My genuine recommendation is, we mentioned Kurosawa before, it's a couple of weeks ago. I believe, what was your Kurosawa recommendation?
Rashomon.
Yes. Well, I've got a slightly different one here, and it was one that George Lucas has spoken about as being an influence on him, although he's spoken about a lot of Kurosawa as being the foundation for his work. And it's The Hidden Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 1958 film, Kurosawa film, and it begins in a similar way to Star Wars films, although it's two main characters rather than the one peasant of the first Star Wars film. So I suppose it's more akin to the two characters of The Force Awakens. So that's my genuine recommendation for this week.
Well, in a shock turning event, Sam's gone obscure and niche, and I've gone as mainstream as you can get, really. So my first recommendation is kind of in a similar spirit to Sam's recommendation, and my first recommendation is Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Now, in this film, we've given, in this podcast, we've given the original prequels a lot of stick, and they genuinely get a lot of stick. And a lot of that stick is genuinely deserved. I think I've got a long-term goal to re-edit the first three films into one film, to hope that somewhere in there's a nugget of a good film.
Yeah.
But I will say this, I think the third film is not as bad as everyone thinks it is. The third film has some excellent fight scenes, some excellent story beats. It is the best of a bad bunch, and it certainly doesn't touch any of the original three or even this film. And despite what my Twitter row with you was saying this week, Sam, I don't think that the original three are worse than the prequels. I think, it is of those, that trilogy, it is the one I've watched more than once, and it is better than people can give a stick for. My second recommendation is an actual genuine recommendation of a great film, and it is the 2011 film Attack the Block. This is written and directed by Joe Cornish, starring John Boyega, Finn from Star Wars. Essentially, aliens invade a block in, I believe, North London, and a local gang of hoodies have to defend their block from the evil alien invasion. It is funny, it is brutal, it is one of the most inventive British films I've seen in a long time. It even has Nick Frost. He has Nick Frost in as a extended cameo. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It is one of the best British films I've seen in a long time. It's well worth seeing.
Next week, I would like to watch a film that by chance I was given for Christmas. And it was going to be my sister, whose taste in films is very good and would probably have chosen a good film for me anyway. But it just so happened that as she was thinking about buying it for me, she saw me mention it as not having seen it on Facebook. So she decided to go out and get it for me. And it is Whiplash.
Ah. So I've not seen it either.
Oh, right.
So, yes, Whiplash. I shall dig that out and give it a watch next week.
So, guys, do remember to get in touch with us on Twitter. You can talk to us both at Prestige Podcast.
You can find me at Rob Kaiju.
Or you can find me at life_academic.
If you do like the podcast, please give us a like, give us a recommendation on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen. It really does help sort of raise our game. And we'll see you guys next week.
To be honest, if you got this far in the podcast without liking it, then I don't know why you're still listening.
Masochism, mainly, I'm sure.
Right, all right, see you next week.
Bye, guys.
The Prestige is a Kaiju Industries production. Check out their other work at facebook.com/Kaiju Industries. Rawr! Arrgh.